Chapter 13. The Unions. Breaking up is hard to do. The time had come to publicly break from my union friends. April 1991. April is a unique month in the legislative calendar. Days at the Capitol are long, intense, and without break. Legislative deadlines for budget and policy bills make legislators feel as if everything is happening at once. They try to be in three places at the same time. Emotions run high. Lobbyists and other members of the public feel locked out of decisions being made behind closed doors. Everyone craves sleep. In other words, April is a grumpy time at the legislature. In my optimistic, albeit naive way, I had hoped the compromises I was making to the chartering legislation would bring some relief to the unions. They didn't need to love it, but I knew their outright opposition could greatly complicate the path to successful passage of the bill Representative Becky Kelso and I were shepherding through the legislature. In this critical time, I heard from people on all sides of the battle. Shortly after the April 5th meeting, I received the following letter from Tom Nelson, the former DFL senator and education commissioner, who was then working at the University of Minnesota. Dear Ember, I wanted to send you this short note on the meeting we had last Friday on the charter school bill. I believe you handled this meeting extremely well. This bill is the one piece of education legislation this session that has the potential to make a real difference. For that to happen, the Senate bill needs to stay together without a great deal of changes. The House bill on charter schools will not create the same environment for change. It is tough to disagree with friends, but their issues on this bill are ones of protectionism and not what is best for children. I understand the position they are in, but that does not make it right. Hang in there. This one will be viewed as major change down the road. Sincerely, Tom. I also received the following memo from Ted Coldery. A person friendly to the bill talked the other day with Sandra Peterson. He reports, "The MFT just may want to come out with something if it can meet their concerns. These are with the Senate bill specifically. The provisions for teacher leave don't protect seniority. It would permit unlicensed teachers in the schools. It sounds like the Tesseract, private for-profit school. These schools drain off resources that would otherwise go to reducing class size and increasing teacher salaries." This is amazing. It's worth checking with Betsy Rice, but Sandra probably misunderstands the leave provisions of the bill, probably misreads the licensing provision, at least in the current draft, and apparently does not understand that you have ruled out for-profit operators. The point about draining off resources that could otherwise go to salaries speaks for itself. My friend told Sandra, "This bill is the ultimate opportunity for teachers to get professional status." Things were also heating up outside the walls of the Capitol. In a March 25th memo, Coldery wrote me, "The MEA clearly does not accept it. The state office has put out the word to the local leadership to tell their legislators over the Easter recess to defeat Senate File 630. Similarly, in an April 15, 1991 legislative update widely distributed by the Minnesota School Boards Association, MSBA, lobbyist Carl Johnson wrote the following about the chartering bill. "It is being advanced as an extension of open enrollment and site-based management. Could also be perceived as an extension of the homeschool in the other direction. All money, including capital expenditure and formula allowance, go with the student. The district must provide transportation. This is a terrible concept. It could be much improved if only school boards could do the chartering or be the sponsor. One district, North Branch, is experimenting with a similar concept. Please share your feelings on this one with your legislators. The concept of chartered schools will be a part of the omnibus bill unless we can prevent this idea from being established as state policy." For their part, the MFT and RFT were still working with me on the public front. The April 16, 1991 RFT Collective Bargaining Bulletin reported our progress as follows. In the last Collective Bargaining Bulletin, there was a brief report on a charter school bill, Senate File 630, introduced by Senator Amber Reichscott. The RFT Executive Council voted to oppose the bill in its current form and asked Executive Secretary Nowak to lobby against the bill unless substantially modified. The bill, as currently drafted, allows boards of K-12, intermediate districts, joint powers groups, University of Minnesota, any state college, four-year community or technical, and the Minnesota Board of Education to sponsor a charter school. A charter school might consist of a small number of teachers wishing to operate their own school free of the rules and bureaucracy found in many school systems. "This concept by itself is not bad," said Nowak. "But should the legislature allow boards other than K-12 or intermediary school districts to sponsor charter schools, permit them to hire unlicensed teachers, and send to these schools the per-pupil funding normally allocated to their home and school district, it will be seriously tampering with the public school system as we currently know it in this country." Reichscott met recently with Nowak and other interested parties and promised to revise Senate File 630. The MFT and most education organizations oppose Senate File 630 as currently drafted. A hearing on the bill is scheduled for April 16th. By now, other legislators and I were hearing quite a bit about the charter school bill. What was most frustrating was that I was hearing, quote, facts, unquote, about the bill that were untrue. Not only were some objections misinformed, but the language was also ratcheting up. The Minnesota Education Association, MEA especially, was rallying its troops with a four-page document entitled Why MEA Opposes Chartered Schools. The document called the proposal, among other things, insulting, a costly hoax, more bureaucracy, lax standards, and elitist. It claimed children would be guinea pigs. Of all the objections, one totally floored me. It was, and I quote, "open door to vouchers." Finally, chartered schools provide an open door to vouchers. The ability to procure funds could mean that leaders of private schools would seek charters to obtain public money for their particular institutions under the guise of a chartered school, unquote. Vouchers? From me? You've got to be kidding. I had always opposed them. Yet, of all the issues raised, I knew this could be the most politically damaging. We needed to make crystal clear that chartered schools were public schools, not private schools. Like all public schools, they would be tuition-free and open to all students, first come, first served. Ironically, though, this voucher discussion may have helped reframe the education reform discussion just enough to help clinch passage of chartering legislation. Vouchers were now a topic of raging national debate. Parents were demanding that legislators improve our public education system. In Minnesota, we were on the brink of offering a new kind of public school choice that seemed far more acceptable than opening the door to private school vouchers. By mid-April, the chartering proposal was being debated on multiple fronts and taking on a life of its own at the Capitol and in legislators' districts. This forced me to be on the defensive. I spent a good part of my days calming fears among Senate colleagues and setting the record straight about what the chartering bill actually was meant to do. With so many objections being circulated, I knew no amount of negotiation with the unions would make the legislation acceptable to them. Sundin affirmed this in her August 2011 interview. She felt the compromises I had made in the legislation regarding licensed teachers and removal of post-secondary sponsors were not enough. She added, "And I don't know what would have been enough, frankly. I don't know that Reichscott could have gone far enough to ever get support for it at that time. The unions realized that any amendments would only be temporary, and that once we went down this road, the issue would continue to be amended to undermine traditional districts." We were now at another strategic fork in the legislative road. Could we even pass chartering legislation through a Senate and House dominated by union-supported DFL majorities if the teacher unions were fully mobilized against it? I sought counsel with supportive Senate and House colleagues. We agreed we could pass it, and we should. Frankly, the myths being generated by union opposition were as disturbing to my colleagues as they were to me. Some colleagues were downright angry. We did not anticipate a problem passing the legislation as part of the Senate Omnibus Education Funding Bill, as most senators had already voted for chartered schools twice before. An informational hearing on Kelso's chartering bill in the House Education Committee had just taken place. Kelso would not push to include any part of it in the House Omnibus Education Funding Bill carried by Representative Ken Nelson, as her attempts to move it would likely end in defeat. Once the two Omnibus Education Funding Bills would meet in conference committee, we could work to assure the necessary 3 votes from each legislative body to adopt the chartering language into the final bill. While the conferees would likely adopt additional amendments and compromises to obtain House support, I was hopeful the fundamentals would stay intact. Once the chartering language was part of the final Omnibus Education Funding Bill, no amendments could be offered on either the House or Senate floor. Any final vote in the House would not be on chartered schools per se, but in support of or against the entire Omnibus Education Funding Bill with much-needed revenues for education. No one could remember a time when a legislative body had rejected an Omnibus Education Funding Bill. The time had come to publicly break from my union friends. My supportive colleagues and I saw a pathway to passage, but it wasn't going to be easy. The next few weeks were going to be miserable.